Thank you for tuning in to the WOLA podcast, Latin America Today, and the Just the Facts podcast. It's Friday, September 27th, 2013. I'm Adam Isaacson, Senior Associate for Regional Security Policy here at WOLA, and it's time for another Week Ahead podcast. I spent this week in Colombia. I just got back, and most of what I know about what happened this week came from hotel and airport internet. So this week, instead of three topics, I'm going to be able to cover just two. First, the declarations made by Latin American leaders at the UN General Assembly in New York this week. And second, a look at a topic I was able to investigate quite a bit in Colombia, the current difficulties of the peace talks with the FARC guerrilla group. First, leaders of dozens of nations have been in New York City all week for the launch of the 68th General Assembly of the United Nations. This annual meeting includes several days of general debate, which is what they call it, and that's where each world leader who's there gets to give a speech. Several Latin American leaders were there and gave notable speeches this week. In fact, the very first foreign leader on the agenda was Dilma Rousseff of Brazil. She went on right before U.S. President Barack Obama, and she gave him an earful. Last week, Rousseff canceled an official state visit to Washington, which was scheduled for October, in order to express her unhappiness with revelations that the U.S. National Security Agency had been spying on Brazilian citizens' communications, including Rousseff's own emails and text messages. The spying was the first and strongest subject of Rousseff's speech, and she made clear that she is very angry, quoting her, "Tampering in such a manner in the affairs of other countries is a breach of international law and is an affront to the principles that must guide the relations among them, especially among friendly nations. A sovereign nation can never establish itself to the detriment of another sovereign nation. The right to safety of citizens of one country can never be guaranteed by violating fundamental human rights of citizens of another country. We face a situation of grave violation of human rights and of civil liberties, of invasion and capture of confidential information concerning corporate activities, and especially of disrespect to national sovereignty." Very strong words. If there was any doubt that U.S. relations with Brazil are in their worst moment in memory, President Rousseff's speech did away with it. Laura Chinchilla of Costa Rica and Ricardo Martinelli of Panama had angry words about their land and maritime border disputes with Nicaragua. "Costa Rica is a firm believer and scrupulous observer of international law in all its aspects," said President Chinchilla, "but this attitude contrasts with the absolute disrespect of the government of Nicaragua of those elementary norms of conduct and coexistence among nations. This disrespect has led to open and unacceptable aggressions against our country," she said. For his part, President Martinelli said, "My government finds itself in the pressing need to categorically reject the Republic of Nicaragua's attempt to delimit its maritime boundaries." Colombia has been broiled in the most severe of Nicaragua's various maritime territorial disputes over territorial waters in the Caribbean Sea. But President Juan Manuel Santos did not mention that at the UN. His speech focused on his government's ongoing peace talks with Colombia's largest leftist guerrilla group, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC. More about those talks in a moment. Santos said, quote, "We have the best opportunity before us today, an actual opportunity, maybe the last one, to bring the conflict to an end, and I couldn't die in peace if I failed to do everything in my reach to take advantage of it." Santos also made a gentle call for drug policy reform. "Right here in this same headquarters 52 years ago," he said, "the convention that gave the birth certificate to the war on drugs was approved. Today, we must acknowledge that war has not been won." Guatemala's president, Otto Pérez Molina, who has even called for steps toward legalization in the past, was even more emphatic in his speech on Thursday. He referred to last year's referenda in the U.S. states of Colorado and Washington, in which citizens voted to legalize marijuana. "Guatemala," Pérez Molina said, "commends the visionary decision of the citizens of the states of Colorado and Washington that have led the way to an approach addressing drugs centered on public health, the prevention of addiction and violence, and full respect of human rights." Elsewhere in Central America, the president of El Salvador, Mauricio Funes, claimed important progress in reducing violent crime. He said, quote, "The government has created new police units, graduated 4,000 new police agents, and redoubled operational plans to repress crime. At the same time, a non-aggression pact between the two main youth gangs in the country signed 2 years ago, of which the government has only been a facilitator, has created the minimal conditions to reduce levels of gang violence," end of quote. Funes claimed a 50% drop in homicides, but did not mention that homicides have been creeping steadily upward in the past few months as the gang pact is starting to look a bit shakier. President Funes, who's from El Salvador's left-of-center FMLN party, also called on the United States to end its embargo of Cuba. I consider Cuba to be part of the America's soul, he said, and the blockade represents a vestige of the past. The president of Uruguay, Jose Mujica, gave a long philosophical speech that sort of resembled a church sermon. I come from the South, he said, where I carry my burden along with devastated indigenous communities, with the remnants of colonialism in the Falkland Islands, with the useless and sad blockades of Cuba, with the electronic surveillance of countries like Brazil, fathered by the distrusts that poison us, with the duty to fight for the fatherland for all and so that Colombia can find peace. Mujica criticized the capitalist world's materialist and consumerist values. We've sacrificed the old immaterial gods, he said, and now we occupy the temple of the god of the market. He called instead for a world without borders, with greater international cooperation on priorities like worker rights and environmental protection. We must govern ourselves as a species, said President Mujica, or we will succumb. Other leaders on Latin America's left were also critical of capitalism and of the United States. Evo Morales of Bolivia cited progress that his country has made toward meeting the Millennium Development Goals. He went on to say that this progress was due to the fact that Bolivia was no longer subjected to the North American Empire and no longer had to share its natural resources with multinational corporations. Morales questioned other leaders' rhetoric about democracy. What justice are they talking about? What democracy were they talking about when countries like the United States could spy even on their democratic allies? There was much arrogance toward the rest of humanity on the part of the United States, he said. And Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner of Argentina called on the United Kingdom to dialogue with her government to resolve the two countries' long-standing bitter dispute over the Falkland or Malvinas Islands. She also expressed hope that Iran's new, more moderate government might be more helpful to Argentina's investigation of the 1994 bombing of a Jewish community center in Buenos Aires. One Latin American leader canceled his visit at the last minute. Nicolas Maduro, the president of Venezuela, said that he was staying home because he felt threatened by an unspecified conspiracy against him. Maduro said that the conspirators included two very conservative individuals who had served as assistant secretaries of state for Western Hemisphere affairs in George W. Bush's State Department, Otto Reich and Roger Noriega. Quote, the clan, the mafia of Otto Reich and Roger Noriega once again had planned a crazy, terrible provocation that can't be described in any other way, Maduro said, but he offered no other details. President Maduro has been denouncing conspiracies with remarkable frequency lately. A couple of weeks ago, he blamed a national power outage on saboteurs. He's been blaming the country's chronic food shortages on anti-government elements in Venezuela's business community, deliberately holding back production. And on several occasions, Maduro has claimed that the U.S. government is hatching a plot to assassinate him. Last weekend, Maduro and his government denounced the U.S. government for prohibiting his presidential aircraft from overflying the airspace of Puerto Rico, which is a U.S. commonwealth. Maduro was embarking on a visit to China. U.S. officials responded by granting the Venezuelan president last-minute permission to fly over Puerto Rico and explained that they had denied the permission because Maduro was not flying in a government plane. It was a borrowed Cuban plane because his presidential jet is under repairs, and also because Venezuela had made its request one day in advance and not the required 3 days. It is notable that President Maduro chose not to participate in the UN General Assembly meeting. The annual speech-making session was always a big event for Maduro's predecessor, Hugo Chavez, who died in March. Chavez made the most of his visits to New York, organizing rallies with activists and giving some memorably fiery speeches, including one where he famously compared then-President George Bush to the devil. Perhaps this was just too hard an act for President Maduro to follow. On to Colombia, though, where peace talks between the government and the FARC guerrillas are in a rough moment. Negotiators in Havana, Cuba, finished their 14th round of talks back on September 19th. They're right now in a 10-day break, actually a two-week break. They had very little progress to report. The delegations continued advancing in the construction and writing up of accords, said the two sides' joint declaration after the talks round ended, a sentence that's pretty similar to those we've read in earlier rounds of talks. But the government's lead negotiator, Humberto de la Calle, sounded pretty unhappy in his statement after the talks. He accused the guerrillas of engaging in, quote, excessive rhetoric over the most diverse aspects of the nation's life that have nothing to do with the talks' agreed agenda. He complained about the glacial pace of the talks, called on the FARC to honor the commitment to negotiate, quote, as expeditiously and quickly as possible. For their part, the FARC's negotiating team in a statement complained that the government is not consulting with them before introducing laws about transitional justice and about how to legalize any future peace accord. The guerrilla statement called on the government to, quote, respect the bilateral nature of the talks that provides the trust needed to keep the process going. The dialogues will be a year old next month, and so far have reached agreement on only one of five substantive agenda items. Since early June, the FARC and the government have been stuck on the second agenda item, which is guarantees for a nonviolent opposition's future participation in politics. This agenda item has largely been stuck on a topic that was actually supposed to be the last thing, non-substantive topic, to be negotiated, the question of how Colombia would make official what is agreed at the negotiations. The eventual peace accord must have the force of law in Colombia. The question is how to do it. The FARC want to call a constitutional convention to meet and rewrite Colombia's 1991 constitution. The government absolutely refuses that and is insisting on a referendum. Neither one of those options is great for a peace process with a guerrilla group that is widely unpopular in Colombia. Polls show a majority of Colombians supporting the peace talks, but they also show a strong majority of Colombians opposing things that might come out of peace talks, like guerrilla leaders avoiding prison time or guerrilla leaders being able to run for political office. Polls also show former President Álvaro Uribe, a fierce opponent of the peace talks, with a higher approval rating than the current president, Juan Manuel Santos. So a referendum on the peace talks could run into trouble with popular opinion. And a constitutional convention could end up with Colombians electing many of ex-President Uribe's very conservative supporters, who would then rewrite the constitution in a way that is exactly the opposite of what the FARC would want. But still, the talks remain stuck on this dispute over how to legalize the accords, and now Colombia is getting ever closer to national elections. In March, Colombians elect an entire Congress, both houses of its Congress, for a new four-year term, and in May, they elect a new president, or perhaps they re-elect President Santos for also a new four-year term. The electoral environment has really begun to stir up the atmosphere in an unhelpful way for the peace talks, making them more difficult to carry out as President Santos has been declining in the polls. Álvaro Uribe and his political group, who have just launched a slate of candidates for the Senate, have increased the volume of their criticisms of the peace process. Their words have a lot of impact on how the process is viewed by Colombia's business community and by elements of the armed forces, and it's hard to succeed without some support from both of those sectors. And they're tapping into a growing amount of impatience in Colombian public opinion. To some extent, in response, President Santos has ratcheted up his own rhetoric about the peace process. "I'm still optimistic, but the Colombian people's patience is not infinite," he said before the UN General Assembly. "The guerrillas will have to decide whether they choose an honorable and lasting peace or whether they wish to return to war." At an earlier speech in New York, Santos referred to the guerrillas as, quote, "that dead cow in the road," slowing Colombia on its way to being a fairer and more modern country. In response, the paramount leader of the FARC, Timoleon Jimenez, or Timochenko, issued a statement Wednesday that could throw the talks into even deeper crisis. The guerrilla leader objected to President Santos's tone and said that he has ordered his negotiators in Havana to stop respecting the talks' confidentiality and to prepare a public report airing the content of their discussions before the media. If that happens, it could be a threat to the talks. Mutual confidentiality has been a cornerstone of this peace process, a ground rule that was agreed early on. Both sides demonstrated respect for this rule is one of the main reasons that observers have felt confident that these talks, the fourth attempt to negotiate with the FARC over 50 years, were likely to succeed. Still, the government's chief negotiator, Mr. De La Calle, played down the FARC's threat. He said that his negotiating team has stuck strictly to the negotiating agenda and has nothing to hide. Ultimately, while this is a crisis, it is reversible. Peace processes routinely go through bad moments like these, and it's up to the mediators and negotiators to navigate them. Despite the current challenges, including the upcoming election season, an eventual accord still remains the most likely outcome, sometime in 2014, probably. The negotiators return to the table in Havana for their 15th round on Thursday, October 3rd. On one positive note, this week, 1,200 experts and activists from nearly every corner of Colombia gathered for an official event in Bogota, designed to collect their proposals for the peace talks' fourth agenda item, which is reforms to drug policy. This is the third such event organized to get civil society input, part of the peace table process. The earlier ones dealt with the agenda items of rural development and political participation. Like the others, it was organized on behalf of the negotiators by Colombia's National University and the UN Development Program. A clearly overwhelming majority of those in attendance at this event called for an end to the U.S.-sponsored practice of massively spraying herbicides from aircraft to kill plants used to make illegal drugs. The fumigation program, which will be 20 years old next year, has contributed only modestly to Colombia's recent reductions in cultivation of coca, the plant used to make cocaine. Manual eradication plus efforts to increase state presence in rural areas have done more, while spraying alone has in fact hardened populations' opposition to the Colombian government. but the fumigation persists for now at least, though it will certainly be on the table once the negotiators in Havana get to that topic, if indeed they do. And that's it for now. Thank you for listening to WOLA's Latin America Today and to the Just the Facts podcast. Please keep listening. We're up on iTunes, where if you have a moment to write a review, we'd really appreciate the feedback. And actually, more reviews does help us reach a lot of new listeners via iTunes. Meanwhile, please keep visiting WOLA's website, www.wola.org, and the Just the Facts website at www.justf.org. If you're finding these podcasts useful, please do consider making a donation to keep these going. You can also find both WOLA and Just the Facts on Facebook or on Twitter at WOLA_ORG and Just F_ORG. Hasta pronto.